18th meeting of the Legislative Coordinating Commission to order. Item number one on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the June 11th, 2015 meeting. They were in your packet.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes of the June 11th meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Next, consideration of appointment of directors to three ethnic councils. Mr. Hubinger, if you'd like to give us some background on that.
Mr. Chair and members, several of you have been involved in the search process itself, and others were involved in the legislation that was adopted in the 15th session. There was a provision in the state government finance bill that restructured the three state ethnic councils, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, and the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. That legislation clarified the mission of those three councils and altered the membership, and also in part required the LCC to appoint the directors of these three councils. Nonpartisan legislative staff from House Research and Senate Council on Research have been working with members from each of the three ethnic councils throughout the search process. We have also been working closely with staff in the executive branch from Minnesota Management and Budget and from the SMART office, the Small Agency Resource Team, which is an office within the Department of Administration that provides support to these councils. We have been working closely with leadership in this entire process. We met with leadership staff several months ago to lay out a process that would work for making these appointments. We also consulted with the three councils that were involved in evaluating the skills and abilities that these directors would need in order to be successful in their work. We worked with the councils on the job descriptions. Because these three positions are actually in the executive branch, we worked with MMB to have these vacancies posted on the state's employment application website. And then in addition to that, the LCC advertised these positions on Monster.com, the Deed job website. We posted the vacancy in numerous community newspapers and also sent the notice to a number of minority community organizations. We established three search committees, one for each of the councils, which consisted of three members from those councils that were appointed by those councils, and then three nonpartisan legislative staff, Patrick McCormick from House Research, Greg Knopp from Senate Council on Research, and myself. These three search committees met, reviewed all of the applications that were submitted, and then identified candidates for initial interviews. Those three search committees interviewed a number of candidates, and then after a lot of discussion, forwarded a number of names to an LCC subgroup. The LCC established a subgroup or a subcommittee of a member or representative of each of the four caucuses, thanks to Senator Pappas and Representative Hoppe and Representative Carlson for participating in that effort, as well as Mr. Matzik and Mr. Golnick. That subgroup conducted second interviews for each of those three councils, and after their discussions, they forwarded three names, one for each of the councils that you'll be considering today. Those three candidates are here and are prepared to meet with you. The idea, I believe, is to have each of them come forward separately and briefly introduce themselves and talk about their experience that qualifies them for the job, and then be available for questions from you. Before we go to that step, I'd just like to thank all the staff who worked on this effort. In the staff summary, at the very end, there's a list of all the staff that from House Research, Senate Council, and the LCC that participated in this. This is really a group effort, and I thank each of them. I especially thank Greg Knopf and Patrick McCormick, who participated in 20 interviews in the last 3 weeks for these council positions. And then at the end of that memo, I list the staff from the executive branch agencies that also participated in this process. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Very good. With that, we'll bring up each one of the candidates individually and let them give a brief introduction of themselves and talk a little bit maybe about their background and experience for this position. And maybe if we could keep that to 2 or 3 minutes, that would be great. And then we'll let members ask questions if they would like to. So first, for the position of the Council of Asian American Minnesotans, Sia Herr. And I want to make sure that I pronounced that correctly. Okay, great. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for this opportunity to just come before all of you. As you know, I'm the incumbent. I've been executive director at the Asian Council for about almost 3 years now. And I think as an incumbent, I have a track record that you can look to when you ask yourselves whether I deserve to be reappointed to executive director or not. I just want to say that it's with a great deal of enthusiasm and pride in the council's accomplishments in the past 2 years during my tenure, and as well with equal pride in my role in these accomplishments, and then, of course, with a very, very strong sense of wanting to, quote, finish the job, unquote, with our current and upcoming plans and projects that I decided to submit my application for reconsideration to the post. I am the first in my family to go to college and to graduate. I am of Hmong descent, and I think in the state of Minnesota that's particularly relevant because we are the only state in the nation with an API population that is majority Southeast Asian. My background in electoral politics, particularly looking at the impact of outreach on behavior, and then, of course, my background in public policies has have both particularly prepared me for this position because in both of those capacities, I worked very closely with multiple communities to try to understand not just where they have been, but how they got to where they are and what their hopes and dreams say about where they're going, and then really attempting to reach out to them in a dignified manner so that we can talk about the kind of state that we want to be a part of and the kind of nation that we want to be a part of. And so during my tenure as executive director, some of the key accomplishments include the fact that we've adopted the strategy of inviting legislators and commissioners to join us when we've gone to events in our particular communities. I say that with a whole lot of pride because one of the core beliefs that I bring to the Asian Council is the belief that the council wasn't created to be the gatekeeper. The council was created to be a facilitator. And so when we go into our communities and we take legislators and commissioners and members of the governor's office with us, we are just acting as a bridge and we're facilitating conversations that may otherwise never happen because of where our communities have been and because of where they are, and simply because state government at this point in time does not have the linguistic and the cultural capacities to engage with these communities on their own. We've systematically engaged with and to know that we have established our presence here at the Capitol and in our diverse communities. And overall, we've increased our council's ability to identify, frame, and talk about complex issues pertinent to our communities. You know that we've successfully developed and advised legislators to pass legislation on one of the most complex issues of our time, particularly violence against Asian women and children. If you've been following the Pioneer Press or the Star Tribune, you've seen my face sort of plastered on the front page of these newspapers because of the recent attention being paid to a federal and unprecedented lawsuit involving child sex traffic. And then, of course, we've produced a high-quality and original report on one of the most important policies before the state, which is early childhood education. And this report really focuses on the communities that we consider to be the most vulnerable within the Asian American community, and that's the Southeast Asian community. And so with that highlight, I simply want to say that I truly believe that the Asian Council, or the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, with all of its flaws and at the same time with all of its strengths, is better positioned to deliver on its statutory duties today than it was when I first came on board as executive director almost 3 years ago. I thank all of you for your careful consideration of not just me, but the other candidates that are vying for positions at the other two councils. If reappointed, you have my commitment that I will continue to work with you and with the governor's office to ensure that our council continues to actively and meaningfully contribute to your capacity to govern. So thank you.
Yes. Senator?
Mr. Chair, I did have some questions, but I think Ms. Herr has addressed all of them. So if anyone else has questions.
Any other questions from the members?
Mr. Chairman, there is one question that maybe you could expand a bit on, and I think I'll ask this question probably of all of you as you come forward, but there's a lot of diversity within the community. And so here's the question. How do you plan to work with the different communities your council represents, and what would you do to reach out to all the groups as the council's executive? And I think I'll ask that question of all three of you as you come forward. But if you could expand on what you said earlier in that regard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that's a wonderful question. And to be completely honest with you, I will say that that question is one of the questions that the council asks itself every single day. In particular, I ask myself that question because the Asian Council does represent the most diverse of all three councils. We represent a community that is descended from more than 40 nations. What that means is that from the nation of Laos, we have at least two ethnic groups, and from the country of Burma or Myanmar, we have at least three ethnic groups. At the Asian Council, it has been the board's wish, and to which I completely agree with, that in terms of reaching out to our respective communities, that we have to look at we have to ask ourselves what kind of a council do we want to be. And the answer to that is that we, at the very least, must assist you in helping to raise the baseline as it relates to the quality of life for Minnesotans. And so the board has directed us, the staff, to look at, you know, what are the policy issues of the day for the community as identified by community members. And with respect to those issues, we've looked at who are most likely to be impacted by these issues should we be able to have any kind of impact at the legislative level on these issues. And so where some of those issues are concerned, some communities experience those issues at a much more urgent level than other communities within our community. So, for example, when it comes to early childhood education, that is an issue that is incredibly relevant to the life chances of children from our Southeast Asian community, whereas for our Chinese and our Filipino and for our Japanese communities, you know, existing data tells us that these children from these communities are already participating in early childhood education at a high level. And so then it is incumbent upon the council to identify strategies and framing of messaging to try to get to these communities. And so having said that, that doesn't mean that we lose sight of the other communities. It is incredibly important for the council to be seen by its communities as a council that is cognizant of the fact that so many communities make up our constituency. And so even if we're not actively working with one community on a specific legislative issue, we are in those communities consistently. Last year, in 2015 alone, we attended at least 50 events. And when we attend these events, I don't just attend them willy-nilly. I go in with the intent to make sure that I seek out the so-called community leaders of the community, and that I am engaging with them, that I'm asking particularly relevant questions about the trends that they're seeing and trying to understand to what extent do they understand the role and responsibilities of the council, so that we can continue conversations with them, so that when there should come an issue, we're ready to call on them and they know that we exist and they understand why we're calling on them. And so, you know, we've looked at strategically mapping our community. There are the five largest communities under our umbrella, and then there are the most vulnerable, and oftentimes they're the refugee communities. And just depending on the requests coming from the legislature, requests coming from the community, requests coming from local and municipal governments, we respond to them accordingly. And I would say that, you know, we've traveled throughout our community, Greater Minnesota here, you know, the largest five communities to the five smallest communities. I think that we've done a particularly really great job at just keeping all of our communities in sight and trying to really chip away at the belief that we are a Hmong council, because the fact of the matter is that community is our largest community, and it is twice the size of the next largest community, and it is a community that is particularly well organized. And so should the council come off as not particularly being attentive to that community, you will hear from the members of that community.
Good, thank you.
Any other questions from the members? Very good. Thank you so much. Next, for the position with the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, Mr. Lewis Porter. Mr. Porter, welcome.
Thank you. Greetings. It's a pleasure to be before you this morning. I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. I was born in New Orleans, 4 pounds, 14 ounces. the elders in my family wanted to rub me down with this mixture of herbs and weird things, and my mother said, no, a greater force will make my child grow, and I think she was right. New Orleans was a place, was a wonderful community for me, and I was very much a beloved child and extended family, but I knew I had to get out of New Orleans if I was ever to grow up. So I applied to colleges far, far away from New Orleans, ended up going to Boston University as a journalism major. Came to the Twin Cities as a reporter after working in Texas, and I did not like Texas at all. And a colleague met me at a conference and said, "You should come work for me." I said yes right away. So that's how I got to St. Paul. I covered education, social services, philanthropy, and general assignment. One of the places that I covered was the Council, what was then called the Council on Black Minnesotans. So I'm no stranger to this organization. I remember looking out of the window of my godparents' home. I was fortunate that they lived here, and saying that I will be gone from the Twin Cities out of Minnesota. It's too cold. There's not enough diversity. Get me out of here in 2 years. That was more than 20 years ago. This turned out to be a very fortunate place for me. I continued education with a master's in liberal studies from Hamline, later a doctorate in organization development from the College of Education, Leadership, and Counseling at the University of St. Thomas. Along the way, I worked at the Mayo Clinic in public affairs and other roles, and worked for nonprofits, later in philanthropy, and established an organization development and communications consulting firm that serves corporate, higher education, nonprofit, and government clients. One of my clients was what was then known as the Council on Black Minnesotans. Was at a banquet and looked across the table and saw a very beautiful young lady. The only problem was she was with someone else and I was with someone else. Well, it's a long story, but we re-met later when we were no longer with other people. And 6 weeks after dating, I told her, didn't ask her, told her she was going to marry me. And she said yes. And we were told that we might not be able to have a child. And so I really never accepted that. And so going to the Mayo Clinic gave us an avenue to work on that. And we are now the parents of an 18-year-old who will be entering college in the fall. Now, Zeem has offered to help me if I get this job in my new role. And Zeem has already testified, done advocacy work, lobbied, and has a slightly more radical outlook than the old man does. So that's a little scary, but I intend to listen to Zeem as well as all of the black Minnesotans in this state. I really believe it's a time for healing, collaboration, and unified effort. As I told one of the interview committees, it has been a lifelong dream of mine to unite African Americans with African immigrants, because I truly believe we have so much in common. And I know that those communities don't always come together well, but I hope to seek common ground and to bring those communities together to work together. I know that there is much work to be done. On yesterday, I was at a conference at the University of Minnesota, and an African-American student in education shared with us, that she feels marginalized and invisible. And it occurred to me that one of my duties, if I should get this position, the essence of the position, would be to be certain that this student and others felt less marginalized and less invisible, and to work with other branches of government, grassroots organizations, a plethora of organizations with different outlooks to that end. Plan to wear out a lot of shoe leather transversing the state, doing what one of my colleagues calls generous listening. My pastor is here today, and like me, we are both large guys, and I said that I wear a 16W, so that means it's a little harder to find shoes, but that's okay, because I'm going to wear out the leather in all the shoes I have going across this state and connecting with and listening to as many people of African heritage as I can, and then bringing those thoughts, wishes, desires, and outlook to the legislature and to the governor's office. Pending your approval, I've said that I would like to start on Monday morning, and I can't wait. Good morning.
Thank you. Questions from members? Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome, Mr. Porter. And could you just talk a little bit about what you think are the most significant issues that Minnesota policymakers face in addressing the needs of the African Heritage community you represent?
I'll be glad to. I believe that education and educational disparities is one of those issues. As we know from the news, the violence on all sides, gang-related police brutality, and the many violence in its many incarnations is a huge obstacle and a huge mountain to be climbed, as well as economic development and jobs. And those three come to mind most quickly. There are others, of course, but those are the three that stand out in my mind.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Porter, or Dr. Porter. You have a very esteemed career and a lot of options. Why are you particularly interested in being the director of this council?
I see this as an opportunity to really make a difference. I've done a lot of things, as you've mentioned, but I see a need to do not only a good job, but to do work that can be transformative. And it's an opportunity to bring people together and to make a real difference in influence. And I think that's what draws me to it.
Thank you.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I just have a question. Is this, just to clarify, maybe for staff or for you, Mr. or Dr. Porter, is this the... Does this replace the Council on Black Minnesotans? Is it renaming
it? What I understand, it's a renaming not only renaming, but working out the approach of the organization and clarifying, as I understand it. So it's now called the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, just for clarity. That's my understanding.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Dr. Porter. And I'm just wondering if you've had a chance. I used to serve on both the State Government Committee and the Government Operations Committee. And one of the things, and that came before, these councils came before our committee, and I'm wondering if you've had a chance to look at some of the Office of the Legislative Auditor reports. I believe there's been at least three reports that heavily criticize the Council on Black Minnesotans. I wonder if you have a chance to read those and if you have any comments on how we can prevent improper things from happening in the future.
I have looked at some of those reports, and I think a lot oversight and checking and double-checking and a commitment to integrity, as well as one of the recurring issues I heard and saw as I did the research, was that there were many who felt that the essence and the true mission of the councils was being lost, and that is to be a connection between those communities and the legislature and the governor. And so I have been told, and I see and agree, that there's a real need to focus on that and to make certain that the lines of communication, the engagement, both with the community and with the elected officials, be really strong. So, and that's what I intend to make one of my first orders of business.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think Dr. Porter covered the question that I asked earlier quite well, but if you would like to expand on just how you would reach out to the various communities, I know you indicated that you were planning to meet with the various constituencies frequently, and by the way, I've got a grandson that would be in your category of shoes, and try to get a pair of hockey skates for somebody. You have to special order them.
Oh, you can relate.
And they're not cheap. But at any rate, if you could expand on what you would do if you have any additional comments to reach out to those various constituencies within the community.
Right. Contrary to popular belief, there's a lot of diversity within the Black community. So we're looking at African Americans, we're looking at immigrants, Somali and Nigerian, Ethiopian, West Indies. And whenever I've been in similar positions, I find that the first thing to do is to find representatives from the various communities and to meet with them. It often helps to meet over a meal and have a courageous conversation, an open and transparent talk, and to always ask each member of the community, whom else should I be talking with? who would you recommend that I'd speak with to get more information, to find out the challenges and what the focus should be? And usually you get two or three from there, and it blossoms out. And so through meeting and looking for commonalities, and then at the right time bringing those, as much as possible, bringing those communities together and finding common ground. It isn't something that's accomplished overnight, but it starts with a conversation and more conversations and more connections.
Thank you.
Senator Pappas? Okay. Any other questions from the members? Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, for the position with the Minnesota Council of Latino Affairs, Henry Jimenez. Am I saying that properly?
You did, actually.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Henry Jimenez. I'm excited to be here. I think Minnesota has only provided me with a lot of opportunities since the day that I arrived here over 7 years ago. I'm originally from the West Coast, was born in California. My parents worked really hard to be able to buy the first home. However, it wasn't in California. It was in Nevada. That's how much the difference was there. So they were looking for opportunities. They went to Nevada. I was able to complete high school, was the first in my family to finish high school, and go into the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, there where I received a dual degree in women's studies and political science. That, again, has to do with the hard effort of my parents to provide a better life for myself and for my siblings. And so I'm always thankful for that. And living through that lifestyle, I know what it is to struggle through school and understand that there's these disparities in education, and living through them myself, it's definitely an area where I feel I would like to have a lot of focus in, is being able to close these disparities here in the state of Minnesota in education. But also, I do believe that there's a lot that we can do with, again, economic development and job opportunities. I think that there's already been a lot of policies put in place here in the state. I think it's just about connecting our communities to those opportunities, and I believe I'm capable of doing that. I've already began to do that in my current position as the executive director of the Central Area Neighborhood Development Organization, in which I've been able to provide employment opportunities in that community create community economic development in that area, which is actually one of the most populated Latino areas in Minneapolis and therefore the state of Minnesota. You said 2 minutes, so...
Yeah.
you did a great job. Any questions from the members? Senator Pappas.
That allows us to do some follow-up questions then. Thank you, Henry. So what would you do as director to assist policymakers in addressing these issues you talked about?
Yeah, I think, of course, I need to be as much of an expert as I can in all the issues, but I really believe that it is the constituents of every legislator that needs to be connected to their own legislator throughout the state. I think that legislators need to hear not just from me, but they should be hearing from the people that they represent, that being in southwest Minnesota or northeast. I feel like I am, you know, I've been described as a connector, and I believe that that's what I can do.
Questions, Representative Loon.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Jimenez. I appreciate your testimony. One of my roles in the legislature is as chair of the Education and Finance Committee, and obviously looking at the achievement gap in Minnesota and how we make sure that all children are learning and being educated to their greatest potential is a top priority. Do you have any specific things you could share with the committee in terms of either observations or suggestions for how we do that better?
Oh, that's a really big question, but I think that, like you said, we need to focus on all of our students. But I think that there's sometimes we have so much focus on maybe the lower tier or the higher tier, but it's also important for us to be able to focus on the tier that, with just a little bit of more help, can make significant changes. And so I would like to explore those options, and I know that there's already programs in Duluth, for example, that they're already beginning to work with the folks that are just your average student who just might need a little bit more to make significant changes. As I mentioned before, too, in education, you know, the Latino gap is huge. But when you look at the unemployment rates, they're not necessarily the lowest. So folks are either not going to school or working, but they're working. So can you imagine if we could just educate that group a little bit more, what the significant changes would be in their employment? So I would like to explore those avenues.
Thank you. I appreciate those suggestions.
Thank you.
Any other Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if Mr. Yonez could expand on that question I've asked earlier a bit more than you have already. And I know when we interviewed you earlier, you told about your own personal background and how that connected you with different communities within the Latino community. But maybe you could expand on just how you would connect with all the different groups that formulate the Latino community.
Thank you. You know, about 50% of Latinos in the state of Minnesota are Mexican descent, which is perfect because I'm 50% Mexican. My mother's from El Salvador, which is, you know, Central America, and so I feel like I have a deep connection to Central Americans as well, which makes the second part that is the greatest of Latinos in Minnesota. But I think that our connection is, like you said, we are diverse, just like all the other ethnic councils are diverse. But you know who else is diverse? Is the entire state of Minnesota. The entire state of Minnesota is diverse, and I think what's important for me is to make the connections that it's not just a Latino issue, but it's a Minnesota issue. And I believe that if we can make legislators see that when a law is passed, it affects all of us equally and the same, then that's how we can bring people together to support whatever it is that's on the table at that time. But I really do think that the biggest or hardest obstacle here would be connecting with greater Minnesota. You know, the Latino community has a lot of pockets all over the state, just like all the other councils as well. So finding that way to connect greater Minnesota Latinos to the greater picture of the state.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members?
Just one final question, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jimenez, why are you interested in this position and working for this council?
As I mentioned in some of my earlier interviews, I felt like it was like seven rounds, but I've lived this life. You know, being a son of two parents who have worked really hard, it's not any different from any other two parents who have worked really hard to get their kids through school and have a better life. But I do feel like there's a disconnect between government, and it's not just in the state of Minnesota, but this is nationwide, a disconnect between government and the Latino community or any other councils. And again, I've been described as a connector, and I believe that I would be great at connecting our Latino community to all of you, and I'm excited to have that task.
Thank you. Any final questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Jimenez.
Thank you.
And members, there is a resolution in your packet, LCC-1, take care of the actions. If this is the action you want to take, we can use that one. Otherwise, you can alter this verbally if you take some other action. Senator Pappas.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, having gone through the entire process with the restructuring of the councils and being on the interview team, I'm just really, really excited to make this motion that the Legislative Coordinating Commission appoint Sia Herr as the Executive Director of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, Lewis Porter as the Executive Director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, and Henry Jimenez as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. I also move that we direct the staff to determine other terms and conditions of employment under the managerial compensation plan and we direct the staff to communicate these appointments to the appropriate councils. I feel like these are my children. I'm so proud of them.
Senator Pappas moves resolution LCC-1 that's in your packet. Any discussion on that? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, just a quick comment. As Senator Pappas pointed out, there were, in the end, several of us that served on that subcommittee, some representing staff, some representing members, but I just want to speak strongly in support of the resolution as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Pepin?
I just had a question under the resolution. Maybe staff could help with the second one. It says direct staff to determine other terms and conditions of employment under the managerial compensation plan. So does that include salary and that type of thing, or what exactly does that mean?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, these three directors are actually employees in the executive branch, and their terms and conditions of employment are determined by the managerial compensation plan. In this resolution, you're directing staff to basically just the only variable left is the salary, and we are have tentative agreements with each of the candidates for that.
Okay, thank you.
And then Senator Pappas.
I was just negligent and not personally thanking the interview team. We had two staff members from the House. There were many staff members that participated. There were members from the different councils that participated, Representative Carlson and myself. And as Mr. Jimenez said, it was many, many rounds of interviews. We did phone call interviews. We did Skype interviews. We spent quite a bit of time. So I think the public should rest assured that there was a lot of thoughts that went into these interviews to make sure we had exactly the right people.
We should acknowledge, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton did sit in on. Great. I mean, Hoppe.
Representative Hoppe. Right.
Excuse me.
We get mistaken all the time.
And Mr. Hubinger and his staff did a fabulous job as well in going through this entire process.
Sorry about the name. The name change.
I'm not sorry. Hamilton might be.
Any further discussion on the motion? Just to be clear again, that motion has three parts. First, the appointment of those three individuals to serve on those positions. Second, to direct the staff to determine other terms and conditions of employment under the managerial compensation plan. And third, direct staff to communicate these appointments to the appropriate councils. So without any further discussion, all those in favor of adoption of resolution LCC-1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. And congratulations to those three individuals. Next item on our agenda is item three, consider adoption of the 2016 LCC Personnel Plan for Employee Benefits and Policies. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, you would have received via email in the last couple of days a staff summary of the proposed changes to the benefit book and then a copy of the benefit book in legislative format showing the proposed changes. As you know, this plan, formerly known as the Legislative Plan for Employee Benefits and Policies, establishes benefits and insurance and vacation and sick leave accrual rates for all of the legislative staff in the House and the Senate and the joint legislative offices. There was a staff group, as usual, that met over the last couple of months to develop proposed changes. The changes for the next 2 years are really relatively straightforward. The most substantive set of changes relate to the insurance provisions. The insurance provisions apply to all legislative staff and to members. The legislature participates in the State Employee Group Insurance Program, which is the plan that applies to all state employees in the executive, judicial, and legislative branches. Those benefits are determined or negotiated through a joint labor management committee between Minnesota Management and Budget and the various exclusive representatives for state employees. There weren't any major changes in the insurance program for the next biennium. There were increases in the first dollar deductibles and copays and coinsurance. There's some improved coverage for dental procedures, and there's a new benefit for palliative care. MMB determines the premiums for that program and estimates that for calendar year 16 that rates will increase by about 7.5%. Most agencies are aware of those changes and have built those increases into their budgets. The director of that program is here, Julie Sonier, if you have any particular questions about the insurance program. The other changes in the benefit book are pretty much in this category of being conforming or clarifications and updating of references. I point out item 7 in the staff summary that relates to deferred compensation. The changes there reflect the increase in the employer match that was adopted by the Senate Rules Committee earlier this spring, and then the increase for LCC-covered employees to the point halfway between the House and the Senate, which has been the practice for many years. Mr. Chair, there's a limited set of changes that are proposed, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any, I guess, first maybe a, well, any questions for Mr. Hubinger about the policy? Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Mr. Hubinger, could you talk a little bit more about the changes on page 56? The you talked about it, but could you talk a little bit more about the deferred compensation?
Excuse me, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the legislature participates in the state's deferred compensation program, and there is an employer-employee match. The House currently contributes $400, and that's provided if the employee also contributes that much. The Senate increased their contribution to $950, and that's only if the employee matches it. The contribution for LCC employees is halfway between what the House does and what the Senate does.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Hubinger. So does this increase the Senate or just the LCC? I didn't get a chance to read this earlier yet.
Mr. Chen, Representative Pepin, the Senate has already implemented the change via the action of the Senate Rules Committee in May, I believe it was. The book is just being updated to reflect that Senate change.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion? The appropriate motion would then be to move to adopt the 2016 LCC Personnel Plan for Employee Benefits and Policies. Is there a motion to that effect?
I'll move that.
Senator Pappas makes that motion. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Any other business? Mr. Hubinger? Very good. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.